And roll call. Chair Sean Campbell, absent. Vice Chair Deb Tracy Prue.
Here.
Martha Dexter.
Here.
Barbara Gorson.
Here.
Ellen Campos.
Here.
Cindy Jackson.
Here.
Nancy Gert.
Here.
I have approval of the agenda for December 12th, 2016.
I'm moving
approval. Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Judy Grunstra. I'm a librarian. Lived here about 22 years, and I hope you're not too sold on this plan because I don't like it. You're giving short shrift to the public with shoehornings, one little library into a parking garage. I don't think that's what the public was thinking when they approved this funding, and. You know, there's beautiful libraries all over. We deserve a beautiful, architecturally lovely building. The Watsonville Library has a new building that does have a parking garage in the back, but they have two floors there on the side. It's a beautiful library. And their square footage is about 42,000 of their main branch, and according to this, you're talking about 40,000, I think, for this. And library, Watsonville, not to say anything bad about them, but I think Santa Cruz has a more library oriented population and a much bigger collection, that's for sure. So, you know, this is just like trying to shove this. Previously, you know, this garage that's been in the works, you know, for numerous attempts to get this garage built, and I don't think the library belongs in the garage. Thank you.
Anyone else? Yes.
I submitted one in writing. I'm going to do that in the future as well, and we can move on.
Oh yeah, I just wanted to comment. On December 2nd, I was privileged to join Susan and some of the other library staff for a meeting with San Francisco Public Library Executive Director Luis Herrera, who came to talk about his observations about urban libraries and renovating urban libraries and issues that face urban libraries. And they, in fact, have 27 branches, and they've renovated 24 of them in the last 15 years, I'd say, 10 or 15 years. And so we talked a bit about that, and then also about some of the issues and services and other things that they encounter at their main branch at the Civic Center Plaza, which was very interesting for those of us looking at the downtown branch here at Santa Cruz. And it was just a wonderful session. We were really privileged to have them. Liz and I was really happy to be part of it. Thank you, Susan.
You're welcome.
I think he was the assistant director at San Jose for a while.
He was in San Diego. Very personable. Our mayor, Cynthia Matthews, joined us, and Martin Bernal as well for a while. So it was a good discussion around some of the downtown branch issues in San Francisco.
It was a wonderful opportunity. He's a good friend of the Parks and Rec Director for the City of Santa Cruz, and was coming down to visit and agreed. So it was lovely. Janice arranged it. Thank you. So
I learned a lot.
I think it'd be great to honestly do a tour up there because I think they face a lot of interesting issues, especially around people experiencing homelessness. And how they create spaces for all in that environment is challenging. So we had some really good discussion about that.
Yeah, just a quick piece of info about Capitola's new branch. The city and our architects Noel and Pam have scheduled their first design meeting workshop January 11th at 6:30 at City Hall Community Room. And at that workshop, the public will be able to meet the architect and everybody else on the design team, give input and ideas on library design, obviously. And then that input will be presented to City Council the end of January, and the second public workshop, which is not yet, the date has not yet been scheduled, but it will be held in February. And it will review all the ideas and look at the final schematics, which will, of course, go to City Council. That's not the final design, but that's called a schematic design, I think, which shows the space, the functions, and where they would be in the building.
So what's the date?
It is January 11th, and it's for the Capitola branch.
Oh, just for that. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So now looking for approval of the consent agenda, which is the minutes for the November 14th meeting.
So moved.
A second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstain?
Abstain.
I guess I should abstain since I'm here.
Okay, our first item in general business is strategic plan.
And I'd like Janice to join us.
Just a brief effort. We're starting to sift through all of the data that we have. I'm going to talk about that. This is really just an outline. Let me tell you a little bit about what we're doing. I'm at the point now where I want to talk to as many people as I can to talk about some of the things that we have all noticed. Now we're doing a hard step about thinking about categories and think about how we want to describe all these things. But there are many things that were revealed in addition to the strategic plan themes or possible themes, and they were very consistent across all of the people that we talked to and across all of the readers. And just to remind you, we did one-to-one conversations, we had community meetings, we did an online survey, we did a paper survey, and we had an online survey of interests and needs in technology. What that meant was we actually got data from about 1,000 different people. So it was a lot to go through. And the 10 readers read, they got a binder that had everything but the results from the technology survey and did a wonderful job. Everybody had their own take on it. Everybody contributed. It was really interesting to read through those. Cindy and Barbara were two of the brave readers who went through, and because it gave a binder to pick, and nobody threw it at us, so that was good. So we talked to staff, and we talked to the community, and we talked to partners, and we keep talking to, especially to partners, about these themes and what we're noticing. And so I just want to talk a little bit about what we're noticing. These are kind of notes because none of this is really settled. It's like I've been through all of these things about 3 times. Most of the readers have been through at least once or more. And so I just have a really quick outline where I want to point some things out to you. It's totally open for discussion. Oh, cooked them. Susan and I met earlier today, and we tried to develop some categories that will make it easy for us to think about some of these things, because some things that were very important to us, and not necessarily something that would end up in a list of strategic priorities, but it's something important that we need to think about now. Go through that as we go down. So when we look at all of this data and how many times things were repeated in the patterns, it seemed to us in a very general way, we're looking for very general words and all-encompassing words, the key things we noticed that were mentioned almost by everyone in almost every venue, that the economic struggle that exists in Santa Cruz County and the impact that that has, the sense of community that in general people have who live in Santa Cruz County, they seek community, they want to have it, they want to work together, they talk about that, whether it's in their own discrete neighborhood or larger. Traffic is a huge impact, and I want to talk about what that means to the library later. Everyone talked about traffic, and that has a very large influence on public library, and probably is going to have a big influence on how we develop our strategic plans, because we can't, this is something we can't run away from. This is something that we live with. That many people, most people want to seek common ground no matter where they live, no matter what group they may be part of, no matter what neighborhood they live in. That's a wonderful characteristic, and then something that Susan and I added that didn't necessarily come up, but we know that it's important, is the sustainability of the library. And so lots of people, because of the sales tax and Measure S and some other things, they're just assuming we're going to be here. But of course, we have to think about how that will really happen. So we added that to the list. As people talked and told us about their lives and what was important to them, we separated things that kept coming up as values to individuals and to groups. And that's the next group of things that people expected and wanted the library to be relevant to their lives. They expect us to be that way, and that's very important to them. The next phrase, we are not a tribe, was actually something that we said in a one-to-one conversation by a homeless person to the library staff. And his point was that he wants us to be careful when we talk about people who don't have homes, not to think they're all in the same boat. And that's how he described it. We are not a tribe. There are some people who are not immediately seeking a home and may not for a long time to come. There are college students who don't have homes who are trying to make it. There are people with jobs who don't have homes that are trying to make it. There are people who just got lost in the system, either separating from the military, separating from jail. There's all kinds of reasons that are just lost in the community. And so that summed up what a lot of other people were saying. So we thought it was important enough to list it as one of the values that we need to think about. The next one is no wrong door. And no wrong door is what the county homeless services people are calling the way they want to offer service. And what that means is this. If you, and it could be homeless services, it could be veteran services, it could be getting information from the library, it could be finding out how to find programs for your preschooler, it doesn't matter. But what can happen is if you go to the wrong place, they will say, no, you go over there because this is not the place. You go over here, this is not really the information, you go over there. You talk to him, you talk to her. And the idea is that we want to identify the places where people go and public libraries are those places where people go. And no matter what they come in with and what their question is, the library is not a wrong door. We will get them to the place that they need to be, which means we need to be more educated on the services people need, and we need to have the partnerships and connections. That's a value that I think is very important in going forward.
And for me, I just liked the concept of no wrong door as a philosophy for the library, that really we're here to assist you with any question you might have. And so there's no bad question, there's no wrong door in a library. I probably took it up a level.
Yeah. So if you come to us, we like to think we will get you started in the right way, and it's something that should always be important to us. Most people, over 90%, I would say, see us, the library, as a neutral place. And I found that really heartening, because they would say that. This is a place where I come and I can find both sides of the issue. This is a safe place where I can come. This is a place where I can get information. So I was very heartened that so many people so highly thought of us and saw us as a neutral place. It's a place that doesn't take a stand. And as far as we can, our services are free, and we need to keep it that way. And that's an important value, that our services are local, that we consider the communities that each of the branches are in, and we respond to what that community needs and what the local needs are. That the library is seen, and I'll talk about this a little bit later, but many, many, many people either see the library as a convener of groups or aspire to have us convene more activities where people can come together, solve problems, share their perspectives. That was came up over and over and over again, that they wanted community forums, they wanted a discussion of social issues. They saw the library as the perfect neutral place to do that, and they saw that as a role we had. It was so consistent across the whole county, and it didn't really matter what way we were gathering the data, it still would come up. And of course, the safe place. You know, a safe place for everybody, not just some people, but everybody. So if we have those key themes and we have those values, then what do we do? How do we get there? And so some of the paths that we identified, and once again, I'm just going to say this several times, this is a first shot at identifying these paths. This is not, you know, none of this is concrete or none of this is anything like that. So one of the paths is opportunities for learning, opportunities to make the digital world including everyone. So whether you have a home or you don't, or you're young, whether you're old, whether you're rich, whether you're poor, whether you've got a job or you don't have a job, that there's digital inclusion in the library and the services related to the digital world. That our spaces be transformative, and of course that's the whole thing to measure us. That's what we need to do. That we need to think of two things. The user experience is how everybody in the community experiences the library. If you're going to use the library, what is that like? Whether you're going to use the library online or you're going to walk into a branch, what is that like? The other path is capacity, and that refers to the staff. So what capacities do we need on our staff? And what capacities do we need to foster in our partnerships to be able to provide some of this information, some of these paths aspire to the values and themes that we talked about. And then once again, and you'll find this repeated a lot, localization, that whatever strategies and solutions we come up with is localized, focused on the community that we're trying to serve. And that's an important thing to remember. So how do we get there? Well, adult programming. Now, this is a remarkable thing because we've done surveys in the past, And people always say children's programs. We want children's programs, we want the babies, we want the middle schoolers, we want the teenagers. They always say that. Well, this time, they didn't really say it that way. They kind of assumed it was going to be there. They kind of assumed we're going to do youth programs. They didn't really mention it as a thing they needed to, we needed to work on or add to, but they did say adult programs. And that was across the board, no matter what way we were receiving the information. Whether it was a 20-something or a senior and everybody in between, there was a great deal of interest in adult programming, but we needed to work more on that. And of course, youth programming, they assume that we're going to have it and they like it and they want it to stay, babies and teenagers. One of the ways that we can address some of these themes and values and paths is by looking at our collection, see if it's as updated as it can possibly be, if we're being as efficient as we can be, what is the balance between hard copy books and electronic books, e-books, audio, video, all of that, all of those things. That is another way that we can address some of these things. And not to get too library-like, but the website and the Discover Library, people mention our website still is kind of clumsy, and we know that. And so we need to work more on the website. And Discover Layer, if I can just summarize it just in a very general way, it just means that when you go into the website, wherever you go, for instance, you go into the catalog, that whatever format you might be interested in that topic is quickly available to you. You don't have to drill down so deep, or you don't have to be so knowledgeable that you have to have a degree to find it on your own. So that's an important thing that we need to work on. Content management, what that means for the staff is that having the website, that means we don't have to go through the IT department to update something, that we can update it ourselves. So as we update all the progress that's being made at all the MetroWest branches, that someone on the staff, someone at the branch can update that information really quickly and we don't have a convoluted way of having to do that. That's what that means. Makerspaces, lots of people are asking for makerspaces of all kinds and all ways for kids and for adults. And that can be defined in many, many different ways. Everybody wants quiet spaces. They're okay with talking in the noise and they know that has to happen. But everybody says you've got to have quiet spaces in every one of these branches. Hours. Now this was interesting because people were not necessarily interested in a total, although more hours, the total hours going up, that's fine. What people are really interested in is when those hours are. Morning hours, I'm looking for evening hours, particularly evening hours, and that relates to the traffic. Because what people have said in their one-on-one conversations and in their surveys is that the traffic is isolating them. And we all do it, I've done it. You go home, there's something, you thought you were probably pretty interested in. And then you think, am I really going to get in the car and go do this? Am I really going to do this? What do I have to do to get there? Am I really going to do this? And lots of people say that they're starting to feel more and more isolated because they can't bring themselves to get back on that road and do that. So what does that mean? That means we have to really think about what each one of the branches is doing. Because one of the things that has not ever come up before was this kind of isolation. People in La Selva Beach said, we're there, we're stranded there. Can we have hours in the evening so we have a place to go and things to do here in our own community? And something that none of us are surprised about, but has never really come up in this way, and certainly not in the large emphasis across the whole county. There was nobody actually who didn't talk about people who were homeless and traffic. I think everybody talked about those things. And then, of course, our a strategy for all the things we want to do is finding partners, finding partnerships, nominate the best kinds of things we can do. Who do we need to talk to? Who do we need to bring in? No, we do not have to reinvent something, but who do we talk to? Who do we bring in to help us? And so that's why we look at partnerships as a strategy. So I want to give some examples of how will that sit down. And there's any number I could go on and on and on about examples. So I just pulled some just to give some quick ideas. So how do we use those strategies to support those values? Some of the actions could be really looking at our local history collections and how we present them to the public and how the public can use them. There's a huge interest in genealogy. How do we support that? Who do we need to talk to? How do we make that happen? STEAM programs for children and teens, and we need to put them in as many branches as we can. The downtown branch coffee hours is a particular service for homeless people every Thursday morning. The downtown branch, there's an opportunity before the library opens for people to meet with library staff. Our librarian, Miley Creek McGraw, is the one who has started this service. And people come and they just talk about what's going on in their lives, what they need from the library, they have a warm cup of coffee. And then what has developed from this is they have the opportunity, if they wish, to go into the library when the library opens at 10 and participate in one-to-one reference interviews with the librarians. And what this means is for instance, there's all kinds of paperwork you gotta fill out even when you're homeless. And if you wanna get on a list and maybe try to find a house, or you wanna get a card so you have a number so you can go to social agencies and you're recognized, there's a whole bunch of forms and things you have to fill out. And so one of the things staff has been doing in that second hour, in these one-on-one reference interviews, is helping people start that. No wrong door. Come on in, we'll sit down and we're going to figure this out. We're going to figure out how to do this. So that's what the coffee hours are. Co-working spaces, there are two women in town, Iris Kavanaugh and Kat Johnson, who come to the library with a proposal to introduce co-working spaces in our public library branches, and we're in talks with them. Co-working would affect many of the things we've identified here, particularly things that have been identified by the 20-somethings and 30-somethings. One of the categories where we have not paid good attention or we're not giving good support are those people who are between school and having a family, being established and having a family. And they don't necessarily have the places to go to get the information they want. If they want to get started on their own as an entrepreneur or that sort of thing, but they still don't have the $200 to $400 it takes to rent a co-working space every month, where can they go? And what Kat and Iris are proposing is working with us on creating a bridge for co-working. The one-to-one reference services I talked about, pop-up tech classes, people in both Spanish and English want classes on using devices and technology. Want those classes in Spanish and English. We actually have a series going on right now being run by one of our librarians, Jen Hooker, and we're monitoring that to see how that goes. It literally is a pop-up library. She pops up at different places and works with a small number of people and works on classes and the techniques that they would need to use, using the internet, using a computer, whatever it is. In both Spanish and English, people are asking for life skills and literacy classes, adult literacy classes. One young man who's identified in his 20s said he just wants classes to teach him how to be an adult. And I would actually want some of those. But it's, you know, it's the life skills thing that somehow seems to be getting missed because a lot of people identify that as a need. Lots of people are searching for a forum to discuss ideas and to connect with people who might have different opinions from themselves. Book discussions related to social issues, that came up a lot, the idea of a forum, and the public library would be the perfect place for activities such as that. Tales to Tale is a good example of a program to use the strategies and the values that we talked about. So I just did that. Summer reading, we know about. Some people are suggesting winter reading, so I put a question mark there because I don't know. Maybe that's something we need to do. Scenic, remember, is the program that we're actually going to initiate in mid-January. We're going to bring a wider broadband to all of our libraries. We're going to be faster, and our pipeline is going to be way bigger. And so that's an action we can take to make for digital inclusion and to take advantage of some of the classes we want to teach. The Veterans Information Center had its soft opening today. And this is a place where we will work with the veterans organizations already in existence and help veterans of all of the conflicts there have been to get the services that they need. Our three volunteers are all veterans. So they can speak with authority, they can engender the trust, and they are in places where they can say, if you come over, come check us out, because we might be able to help you. And this goes all the way back. Every war you can think of, not all the veterans sign up for the services. So then I just wanted to give you a quick couple of examples so that if we take this to its, what so far, a logical conclusion, I hope so. If we identify economic struggle, if we used as some of our values that we are not a tribe, there is no wrong door, that the library is conveners, if we say what's important to us is learning, digital inclusion, and user experience, then we can develop adult programming and partnerships so that we can have coffee hours to do one-on-one reference for someone looking for a home. And I mentioned that because social services people have heard about these coffee hours every Thursday, and they come. And they come looking for clients they can't find any other way. And they come to talk to people about what they have to offer. So that's something that's already happening. And then just another example, if we want to engender a sense of community, we want to be relevant and local, we use learning, the user experience, the idea of learning is important. We do youth programming, we address literacy, and we have a Tales of Tales program. So this is nowhere near perfect, but this is the first cut at all that data. And so what I'm doing is talking to everybody, and everybody can tell you that they were starting to run everything. But I really want to know what you think, what we've left out, if there are better words, better ways for this to come together.
Deliberately giving you a really raw product. You're kind of the first to see this. But the truth of the matter is, I think we wanted real input from you. So for me, the paths really become the core of the strategic plan. And then the last page really becomes more of work plans.
Right.
But I think it's really important that sort of the key challenges in the community we agree to, that the key sort of values that were operating principles, and sort of what main paths there are. So could we start with the key challenges the community faces. I think sustainability was actually sort of the people wanting to preserve this wonderful resource.
Mm-hmm.
It was that piece. Yeah. But and the economic struggle was, you know, a roll-up of 100 different
complaints. Oh, yes. We put a lot of things in there. The high cost of housing.
Affordability. And honestly, everyone talked about.
Everyone did.
Are we creating an economy where normal people can live and stay here?
Yeah. Lots of people talked about their children having to leave my own one. So that came up a lot.
You know, I read through that.
Yes, you did.
And there were two things that I'm not seeing here, and maybe they're rolled into one of your bigger concepts. One of them was, the positive side of it was, everybody seems to mention the natural beauty of
that was what I was going to say, because I heard that.
And then the challenge side of that is the environment,
right.
You know,
yeah.
Ecological sustainability, the drought,
yeah.
You know, the challenges to our natural beauty. And that seemed to be, you know, not every single input had that, but that seemed to be.
Yeah, and it seemed like that would feed into adult programming and other kinds of things, but we can call that out.
I think it's part of this last sustainability word, but I don't think we have the right word.
Yeah, I mean, that may not be the right word.
Yeah. And then the other concept that I saw in a lot of inputs across the geography, so not just in one area, was the fact that people seem to really value the programs and resources that the library and spaces that the library provides to support their creative endeavors.
Ooh.
So musicians, artists, writers, and the work of the existing the poetry programs that go on now were mentioned a number of times.
Yes.
And really, really value that.
I think that's insane for us.
Yeah.
I still think about the fifth graders that said we want places to show our art.
Yes, I know. That's right. Now
it's sort of a cultural.
It's a cultural thing, but more from a
arts.
More from a I want to create. You know, individual wants supporting their creative endeavors.
We had the young man who came in and said we want to do open mics. I
don't
think this
was right, and it crosses, you know, demographics, it crosses ages, etc.
Help with public, you know, young people wanting, you know, like a zine or something, you know,
which is very good.
First opportunity for publishing.
Exactly. So, I mean, there's so many things that can fit under that.
I also just want to say with the Common Ground Fund, this was one of those good and bad that one thing that I think was universal is the engagement of the community is awesome, but then difficulty sort of reaching a common ground sometimes.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, it's a two-edged sword there.
Okay, what about values? What are things that we need to think about as we evaluate any particular program partner?
I heard a lot that the library is a safe place to express ideas.
Yeah.
And you know what's interesting is we heard that and then we got a lot of, but it's not safe downtown.
No,
so
they're
different
concepts.
But I think we have to express them differently.
Mm-hmm.
So safe is probably not the right word.
Well,
but
neutral, I guess, yeah.
But they're related.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but people use the word safe.
That's what they say.
To mean what happens inside the library, right. Maybe not getting into the library, but what happens inside.
Unless
the
you want to say something like inclusive or something to distinguish, but safe is more what they
what
saying.
They use. Yeah.
Yeah. You had some really good questions in your responses. I was just going to try to dig them out.
I didn't bring them, so I'm not helpful.
Well, everybody, because I remember that you had some good questions here. Let me see what I can find.
Okay. I think it's hard to get to the path, but in the list of actions, I know this is one of 1,000 things that were recommended, but I'm also just curious, what couple things would you really like to see us work on in the next 3 years?
Because we're actually going to try to get this down to 5.
Well, and I think there'll be multiple actions, but 5.
There are lots of actions, but yeah.
Well, I think that the actions around creating community gathering spaces, particularly in regards to having a place for some civic discourse or information is something that it seemed every single input had in there.
Yeah.
So you know, the programs or resources or activities around that would be something that...
Well, and I've heard too, not so much the co-working, but just that, well, like you go to any coffee shop, and people comment about this to me, you know, you go into Verve or something, and there's all these people doing their thing, and why isn't the library's free?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, and it has Wi-Fi, and but more than one person said to me, well, when I think of a place to go and hang out, I'm not thinking of the library. But when we got talking about it, they thought, well, that would be, yeah, maybe I should be. So somehow getting that.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it depends on what branch they're thinking of? Because
right.
Honestly, people to South Valley on Saturday, there's a ton of people doing that.
It has a lot to do with the welcoming spaces.
Right.
When you've got a lot of comfortable, and whether or not you're comfortable spaces.
Yeah, right.
Because the two comfortable chairs in the Sullivan's are always filled.
Right.
It's true.
Why would you don't want to go to the downtown branch?
No,
right?
Yeah,
the clientele there.
And also the rest 40 branch kids might not have kids that don't want to go because they're people less than they're all there, just want home for going in.
Yeah.
So when you have a place like Bird and there's a money component involved,
yeah,
automatically.
Well, one of the things they talked about when we were talking with Luis Herrera was this sort of concept of zones.
Zoning
in the building. I mean, this would not be just downtown, but in the how you design the spaces. So
or for quiet spaces and for hangout spaces and for
Right, and making it really clear on that. But
I think there is something that we need to be deliberative about, though, if we want these to be community hangouts. Honestly,
mm-hmm.
I think I agree. I think there is something about Scotts Valley, but again, it's a louder space. It's and I do think things like food affect and comfortable seating to allow people to stay longer. Enough bathrooms, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
The Wi-Fi,
and the
hours. And that's, well, to me, that's sort of the overarching piece, because I think that everything that you mentioned, Janice, especially in the past, and I think everybody sort of has this vision of what can happen in a library. That's all really good,
mm-hmm.
But if the libraries aren't open, then they're not going to thrive.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're wanting it to be identified by the community as a community space, then it's going to have to be really accessible. So I think that's, to me, that's one of the keys to success. I mean, I think that is the underlying key.
And you've got to have equipment there. You've got to have decent computers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that will happen with the bond money. I mean, that's
well,
right.
So this isn't well known yet, and I still haven't gotten a final number, so I don't necessarily want you to hold me to this, but the city is closing our fiscal year of July, and the library forwarded a whole bunch of money to the Measure S initiative to get it off the ground, because we haven't sold the bonds yet.
Mm-hmm.
So the taxes are starting to roll in and paybacks are beginning to happen to our last fiscal year. So we're likely to end with a substantial amount of one-time funds as a balance. So it really does give us the opportunity as we kick off the strategic plan to have some one-time funds. So I have been individually talking to the JPA commissioners saying, can we talk about hours? This is what the public is saying, but hours is a recurring expenditure. And I need to say, we potentially could have $2 million, which is more than we've ever had. So what I have to do is demonstrate if any of the $2 million is recurring in any way. So we negotiated, for example, a whole new deal with the city of Santa Cruz about overhead that saved us about $200,000 a year. That is recurring. So I can say, let's put $200,000 a year into ours, because we're not creating a hole, because we know the funds are recurring. I can't necessarily do that with the whole $2 million, and I'm working with the city trying to get them to agree on what is the recurring portion of this. But I have to say, I think the commissioners are getting really excited about the projects and want more hours as well. So I'm expecting in January, February, we will come out with some sort of proposal as far as I can push them on the money we have on ours. I think the three areas that will probably be most effective to get resources are library hours, technology, and collections. We're significantly below our peers in our collection spending, but it would also let us have the opportunity to do some targeted improvements, like our Spanish collection honestly is abysmal, and considering how many Spanish speaking people we have, it needs to be upgraded. But we also need to go back, and this will help us with our buildings, we need to go back and just look at our grubby stock, things that have been used so many times, circulated so many times. Actually, if you pull them out and buy something new, it's amazing how much circulation of that item will go up.
Yeah.
And then, again, the technology piece. I think our biggest source of tension in the downtown branch is the computers, because we ration them. There's not enough. And I think our goal really needs to be to have enough public computers. And I think that's probably true at all of our sites. It's remarkable how few public computers we have.
You don't even have any plugs. Will there be an attempt to make them all about some minimal level of...
We're talking about setting a standard.
Yeah. Oh,
and
love it. Thank you.
And what we'd like to do is at least have the basic standard of what you would see in a normal office environment. So, but I have to say we have a ways to go. But so I think we can make some immediate progress on collections, hours, and
technology. Nice, how nice is that?
Okay, we have a month to write this. I think what we'd like to do is take back your notes. I do want to say that I think it would be interesting to send them the text survey. We tried a new tool
Yeah, I can do that.
And it's summarized. Mm-hmm. The results are summarized in an interesting way.
Yeah.
We had over 600 people respond in a month. And if you've ever done survey work, that's just very surprising to me. But I think there's a lot of people that care about the state of our technology.
It also came up every time.
Yeah.
Well, for 600 people to complete is pretty amazing. And their comments were actually fascinating as well, because they commented on everything, including technology.
Yeah. Why don't we have your attention?
Yeah.
Clever. But I
can
forward that.
But I think they, you know, they got into some of the details about how below standards we probably are. We are. I don't have to say problem.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Janice. Janice has been doing an enormous amount of work.
I know.
And if you think of things in the middle of the night, just call me, baby, email.
Yeah.
Okay. I would like to hear anytime, from now on.
Can I just say that I love this process? I think it was really well done.
Oh,
it's very interesting to go through this list, and I mean, I can kind of visualize. You get a picture.
Yeah, it is amazing.
Yeah,
you read it all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just have to say, for me, the one-on-one interview information was so
very
interesting.
Yeah.
And those of you who are not readers, but if you're interested, I mean, Byron is that day. But I mean, I can share it with anybody who wants to see it. Cindy, did you have anything?
The other thing I was going to say was one thing, the one sort of conclusion I had after reading it was that that maybe our role, so what should our role be except to facilitate the use of available information to make our lives better and our communities healthier? I mean, sort of as an overall kind of, so I think this, you know, kind of have to have a...
Yes, it's sort of our mission.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Should we move on?
17.
I just wanted to show you the new org chart. For those, I can say as of today, Janice has been made the assistant director.
Oh.
I'm supposed to announce it today, but I'll announce it tomorrow.
I don't know. I didn't know. People asked me, and I said, I don't know.
We have the retirement of two of our division directors, Sue Graziana and Gail Barton. Gail's going to stay with us. She's agreed to stay a couple extra months. I was very nervous because we had a lot of potential retirements, and Gail's graciously agreed to help us train in the three area managers. She's done a lot of the public service work. We're likely to get some... We have some really great staff, but because of the structure of this organization, very few people in our organization have actually managed people on this scale. And so I'm really grateful Gail's agreed to work with them, sort of give them intensive mentoring. So these positions are now posted. Librarians in the audience, if you know anyone who may be interested, they're really great positions, honestly. And we're really excited.
So are you not going to have managers at each branch now? Or
so there still will be a branch manager. But, and then I should mention this, 2 weeks ago we started moving all the librarian staff had been centralized to the downtown branch. Mm-hmm. So they began moving back to the branches. And I think we're down to like three or four that still have to move, but we've slowly been pushing them out. Now, not all of our branches have the capacity to take staff, so a Felton, for example. So we have three librarians located at Scotts Valley with the intent that they be doing work with both Boulder Creek and Felton. And then we'll move one of those positions into Felton as we develop space. Sandy, we are going to put at La Selva Beach because there is capacity there. To be honest, Capitola is very, very cramped, but we've got one moving in.
But we're going to have fewer people on the road on a regular basis.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Well, that'll be a little bit of a drawback.
doing that part.
So will there just be less moving around? I always personally, yeah. I'm a little biased. I have a child who works at one of the branches, but
I didn't know that.
But she's an aide. She's in school. Yeah. She's worked there for 4 years now. I think something like that. Anyway, the way they move everybody around so much is.
I think both the public said they felt like they were missing those close relationships that they had with the community librarian. And I think the staff felt the same way.
Exactly.
And I think we lost some of our partnerships as a result because we were rotating. We specialized too much.
We stopped being able to go out to the schools because we didn't have people assigned to each of the branches because that's the way we used to. So now we're hoping that we can get back, as soon as schools want us, that we can get back out.
The thing I do want to remind everyone is we have lost 37% of the staff. The reason we centralized was because we didn't have enough staff. And we still don't have enough staff by decentralizing. But I actually think we can achieve more this way. I think it was a worthy enterprise to try the centralization, but especially with traffic the way it is, I don't think it works well in this county. And I think the staff are happier as well. But I just need to say everyone's a little stressed because there's been utter chaos in 2 weeks.
All right. But they're amazingly happy about doing this, so we know we're on the right track. So these are three positions, French. Regional
direct
positions open externally and
internal?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's correct.
And when are you trying to get them filled? What's your goal?
Mid-January.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, you're going to go. It's almost mid-December.
Well, we'll do interviews in mid-January. Oh, probably. If we're lucky, we'll be able to start them in February.
Okay.
She's realistic, and I'm pushing.
I can tell. I see the roles here. You know?
Yeah.
Reality and...
Okay. And that's all I have to report on that. So, I just want to remind everyone that the library does not get to choose their facility. It's the community that gets to choose the facility. I've been working with the city of Santa Cruz, and I do believe what they're offering is something interesting that we should explore. The Measure S provides $25 million for Santa Cruz, and the city's decided to take $2 million, and set it aside for Branch Authority and Garfield because they need improvements, which left us with $23 million. Right now, the average renovation cost in California is $750 a square foot, which we are discovering in our other projects. And we would need about $30 million to construct a 44,000 square foot library downtown. So we're short by $7 million. So the city began having discussions about what could we possibly do rather than downsize the scope of the project. And the idea that came forward was a municipal parking grant / library. There is a model in Watsonville, but in Watsonville, the library does have two stories sort of at the front of the building, and the parking ramp is sort of in the back. I think the courts are on top. I did spend some time talking to Carol, the library manager in Watsonville. It is a beautiful library. I think that the two things that she has been frustrated with is, in some ways, she feels like she's lost the visibility of the library. Mm-hmm. When you have a standalone building, there definitely is a presence that happens. I think the second thing she said was a mistake, and it was really about security around the courts, that there's no entrance from the parking ramp into the library. Mm-hmm. So it creates this really not seamless
interface.
It has very difficult. I've used to use it a lot because I used to go to court in Watsonville a lot, and it's very difficult to access conveniently.
Yeah.
You gotta maybe illegally park at the post office is one of the easier ways. Not that I ever did
that. Sure.
So what is interesting is the parking ramps are not funded by taxpayer funds. They're self-supporting off fees that people pay to park there. And the city has about 1,000 people on their waiting list for a parking ramp permit.
I thought that was fascinating.
It's gone up recently. When businesses go in, if they don't provide adequate parking, they buy parking ramp passes even for their own customers. The other piece is that a lot of the housing developments that have gone in come with a single parking space, and a lot of people moving in can't afford to live by themselves or aren't necessarily a couple, so they're looking for more spaces. So the average downtown worker is a big chunk of that parking need, but it's been aggravated about housing, and it's likely to be aggravated more because they're trying to get more housing downtown. So we initially started talking about a multi-use facility. We've talked through housing on top and parking on top. I am more familiar with housing on top than I am with parking on top. But one of the things I found is if you can put a public library in a joint use facility, it saves money because, like having a roommate, you share bills. The way they've structured this is that the parking ramp would pay for all of the concrete shell of the library. I think we would have to do our own HVAC because it's a separate set of... it honestly reduces... Now the range for the library within the parking ramp is 23 to 27 million. So you can argue it saves 7 million, you can argue it saves 3 million, but the idea is to try not to get a smaller library. I actually agree with the woman in the audience who says that 44,000 square feet for a community the likes of Santa Cruz is too small. I completely agree with that. Unfortunately, you know, this was all part of those Measure S negotiations, and was decided long ago. And to go significantly larger would cost significantly more money. I have also shared my concerns about wanting an architectural space that is befitting of a library, like 18-foot ceiling heights, so that not, you know, especially if you get to one story, if you have low ceilings, you start feeling really oppressed by the ceiling height. So can we get more vaulted ceilings? The architects, which was Group 4 out of South San Francisco, do believe that we can create an architecturally interesting and attractive building. I've also built, the largest library I ever built was 73,000 square feet. And working with the architects, when you get to 50,000 square feet as a footprint, you have to go up, because otherwise you have Super Target. I don't know, do you have Super Targets here? They're these monstrous.
Not really.
No.
Not really.
We have
a mini.
We have like just an hour outside of here.
Yeah.
And so really the sort of rule of thumb is when you hit that 50,000 square feet, you've got to go up. But I think for a lot of people in the business, the extent to which you can have things in a single story building is operationally so much more efficient. So part of what is attractive to me about the potential of that site is the ability to go to a single story. It would give us a full half block and three street frontages, which if you do an all-glass exterior, really the whole activity of what's going on in the library can become your postcard for what's going on and welcoming people in. I also have to say, I know a lot of people put libraries, I've done a lot of work on siting, and I can bring you a piece we did really talking about what is the perfect site for a library, what do we look for. And, you know, there are choices for between civic campuses usually, or between more of retail campuses, and I'll take retail campuses any day. I think public libraries are a lot like retail spaces. If a retail space would be successful there, I guarantee a library will. It doesn't mean that a library can't be successful in a less attractive location, but my goal is to maximize its use, because ultimately high use ends up being higher funding because the community values it. And I'm going to pick on Live Oak. While Live Oak is a beautiful location, it is so outside sort of a retail area of that community that you have to make a special trip to the library.
It's a destination library.
And the one thing about this piece of property that I find intriguing is its adjacency to Pacific Avenue. Mm-hmm. And I would really love to pick up the public traffic off of Pacific Avenue. Usually in a town of this stature, especially a tourist town, you're picking up, I think every urban library has a homeless population, but you should have your residents, and you should also have tourists. And I think there's some really wonderful examples of communities that have done that really well, so that it's a feature, it's someplace that people go. And I guess that is why I'm at this point supporting doing further exploration. So what has happened? The city, it was a long meeting. There was a lot of people that spoke against the project.
The concept,
thank you. Primarily it's the advocates in the community for a more sustainable community by not encouraging transportation growth. And so parking is offensive to them. I think there's a whole group of people that really would like to see the city invest more in housing before they invest in the parking. I think there are people that really love the old library. I have to say, architecturally, I don't love it, but I think it could be taken back to its shell and reutilized. I don't think we should take that off the table. I still think that's a viable alternative.
But one of the things about that, though, is that there would be funding, Measure S funding, going into relocating swing space.
Correct.
That takes away from many big pieces of the building.
And I did one temporary library for 16 months. And it was about $300,000 to do that. So that's $300,000 that then doesn't go into the new building.
Can I go a little back? That raises a question I'm a little slow on the update. So we already had a shortfall. I spent $2 million for maintenance of the two sites that definitely disclosed. But that we're still $5 million short on Redgrass. So just, I mean, how did that happen?
So I would also say that I think Capitola is coming up short.
Because costs,
it's the dust estimate. Yeah, but before we started, it was,
because they had a failed plan and
it took longer.
I would also say that during the Great Recession, actually construction costs went down. Mm-hmm. And so the bidding environment was really positive. So they inflated, but nobody ever expected double-digit inflation.
So is there, I've heard a rumor in the community about that the city's looking at another measure to offset. Have you guys heard that?
No.
In Santa Cruz.
I have not heard that. I don't think...
I'm just putting out that it's... I heard it.
Well,
originally that it was going to be $78 million. Mm-hmm. In fact, the board actually approved that. But then, after the polls came in, they had to back off.
Okay.
And in fact,
didn't get attached to the project.
That, so it was, you know, it went on for so long, mm-hmm. but that was the original figure, but it couldn't swing it.
I also think, and many of you have been through these battles and I have not, but this concept of whether downtown is a regional asset or not, you know, the way the JPA is now created, it is not a regional asset and the other jurisdictions aren't going to help pay for it. And I firmly believe that we need to push more of our services out to the branches, but I also believe it's a regional asset. I don't think we want to create 10 warehouses for our print collections or our history collections. And the most cost-effective way to run a library system is to have a branch that serves as that collection base. And but my understanding is that the other jurisdictions have said, no, we will not help Santa Cruz. You have to just treat it as another branch. Mm-hmm. So this is an interesting and awkward situation.
Well, you could say that, but in the other, they did sort of help in terms of negotiation by the amount of money they got. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's another way to look at it.
Well, one of the advantages of the downtown branch is that, you know, we see a lot about transportation and everything that we're here. Should we have a more robust bus system someday? I mean, the hub of that is downtown. And, you know, the one place that you know for sure everybody could get to
is downtown.
By mass transit is downtown.
Well, also it's not true, and it's not going to be true for a long time.
That's why I said, because unless if we were to get them,
yeah, I mean, I don't believe it's going to be true for a long time.
It is going to happen.
I just have to say, I think Janice is right, though. As we went out to the branches, more and more people were saying, we just don't go downtown because we can't handle the traffic.
Yeah.
And,
well, and we have, in the valley, we have 37,000 people that live in the valley. That's over half the population of Santa Cruz. So it's not like it's a backwater. And a lot of those people, some of them commute, but a lot of them are staying in the valley because mm-hmm. there's businesses there, there's schools mm-hmm. are there. And a lot of people don't go to Santa Cruz. There's not like shopping anymore. There used to be. There's businesses.
I think, though.
Ditto.
So I'm coming from Minnesota, so I have a really different perspective on size. And this is true in my housing too. I am awed by how small everything is.
And how large.
Even if I wanted to take downtown's collection and spread it out, there's no physical space to do that. Mm-hmm. And we will increase a Capitola, and we will increase the size of this, and we will increase Belton. But if I packed these three to the gills, there's still not enough space in these libraries for the collection size we need. So we do need a big collection somewhere, somehow.
And I don't know, at some point you're going to be able to look at the usage of downtown in the past, today, and as the other branches get their Measure S funding and do their new libraries or increasing or renovating, does that draw users from downtown back to the branches, or are people going downtown because downtown does have, like, the genealogy, the history, et cetera, et cetera. It has the bigger collection, and I don't want to wait for the whole to come into my branch. Going to be shown.
I mean, and we know right now which patrons live out, come downtown, do we not?
Yes.
But I need to say, everybody uses downtown to the extent that they're requesting books.
Mm-hmm. Most card holders use three branches, and in over 90% of those cases, one of those branches is downtown.
Does that mean they walk into that branch, or because
they check out
materials at the physically
The
vast majority of people that I've met over the years in the Scotts Valley Friends, almost all of them never even set foot in the downtown branch. Which I was shocked when I first heard that.
A lot of people just don't go to Santa Cruz. It's like a foreign country. We just don't go there.
But
Really? What's with you think? Parking meters? I mean, come on.
Right now, downtown has the highest usage, but I am with Barbara. I think you're going to see as each of these branches evolves, it's going to be very interesting to see how things play out.
But so we have it at Scotts Valley,
Yeah, because we're the second, right?
Or we're I think you're third, but...
Yeah.
Basically, you're going to have to...
Right. What about business services? You know, a lot of downtown libraries end up doing a lot of business, you know, for the companies that are...
And we do some. I don't know if it's a huge part of our business. I've never gotten the sense that it is.
But the feeling is there's less retail and more business, and that's what I was saying.
Right. Okay.
Ellen, you were going to say something.
No, I think that's...
Well, so really right now what they're doing is they're putting a group together to explore a permanent home for the farmer's market. And honestly, if they can't find one, I think this idea will go nowhere.
Yeah.
The second thing is they want to put together a task force like the advisory committee in Capitola, and they're going to limit it to residents of Santa Cruz. I don't know if you're a resident of Santa Cruz, but I would send a note to, I would do Martine Bernal, the city manager, and say you're interested in serving on that committee.
So I called the traffic to come here at 6:30, so I was willing to come to the city meeting and fight the traffic.
And Martha, I think it'd be great if you could be on that group as well. I don't know how large they're going to choose. The idea then would be to work with Group 4 and create, not so far as a schematic design, just how could this work and look, and do a cost estimate. I really do think that the city's intention, I think they want a parking ramp, but the truth of the matter is I think that the city really wants to have a bigger and better library than what $23 million will buy them.
Yeah.
And they're looking for ways to achieve that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're open to other ways as well. But I have not heard another...
No, I haven't heard that at all. That's great. I mean, it's in reference to workforce housing conversation I was having with somebody else for school stuff. And I said, well, I haven't heard.
I would just say San Francisco showed us a couple examples of housing on top.
Yeah.
And there's one with the library on the second floor and a grocery store on the first floor. And so more urban scale libraries built in.
Well, and if this were to go forward, I mean, the space where the current library is, would then, I mean, the city would have that available for other development.
Well, yeah, the conversation was, should the school district be looking for workforce housing?
Oh, yes.
Then there was a possibility of
affordability
type bond or something.
So what do you think the chances are of getting a downtown friends group or downtown group, maybe some sort of thing coming out of this group?
I believe that to be successful, we need to create a downtown
friends
group. Yeah, I really know.
Maybe it'll come. You know, our friends group has been, you know, long-time volunteers, but it's always been book club. I mean, you've got a couple book clubs, two or three or four that work down there, you know, that use that space. You've got lots of parents that have kids coming in being tutored.
Well,
you know, I mean, they're like, seems like a very rich place to be finding a friends group.
Well, and I think bottom line, whatever project goes forward, there will be one. And when a capital campaign needs to be mounted, I don't see how the big friends can be mounting that campaign.
Yeah.
It's not
a lot
of for.
And they know that.
Yeah.
I think it's not what they want to be.
Yeah.
Right.
So, but you know, they're still in a developing mode too. So
of course.
Yeah.
Work with both.
Yeah.
So I thought you'd be interested in that.
Thank you.
There's pictures and drawings and things.
I love the idea of joint use. So I love
whatever it is, whatever the part of the different uses. Yeah.
So that's a real positive.
Okay.
So other facilities project update.
other members might want to talk. Nancy, do you want to just give a thumbs up?
Well, a site plan is being developed by the architect, and there's a lot of different things that are going on the land, surveying, arborists, geotechnical things, and but all that's leading up to, there'll be a community meeting sometime in January, possibly February. It just depends when all these things can get done. But the meeting will be put on by the county, and Betsy Lindberg is the county project manager, and they will advertise it, and basically what it will be a draft concept site plan. And so they'll be there to answer questions, take comments, and then go back to the drawing board, incorporate comments and so forth, and then eventually by, say, June, things will be submitted to the county for CEQA review and discretionary permits, and hopefully those will all go through. Did everything that we wanted to there, and by the end of the year, next year, 2017, or January.
So when do you foresee breaking ground?
Well, right now we're on track for spring of 2018.
It's a little bit ahead of schedule.
Yeah, I know. No, there's no race. No, but it really does depend on, you know, these permits, and hopefully it'll go smoothly.
Yeah. I mean, the cost estimate, I don't know if the county has really looked into any of this, but our architects are working on a project for the Half Moon Bay Library. And,
oh, right. I saw it's a beautiful library. Oh, my God.
It's going to be beautiful. And they just opened the bids and said way above what they had expected or estimated. So they took that info, of course, back to Capitola to say, we need to relook at is what everybody's been looking at as a cost.
So is that 750? Is that the...
I think that was before they did this. So
I can't remember because
the Half Moon Bay Library, I think it's like 30,000 square feet.
It's big.
Something like that.
It's
so
big. And so,
but smaller tends to be more expensive for
Lovely. So they you know have to sort of deliver that.
One thing is the two projects, the Capitola and Felton, are about the same budget, and Felton's smaller square feet. So I think you're more insulated from this than Capitola is right now.
We may be smaller before we're done. We don't know yet.
Yeah. We've been trying to push it up, but the land is just not allowing us to do that, even though I keep working on it. I don't seem
it's
to be
a special site.
Making any headway. But it is, the site is just dictating, you know, what we can do.
Do you want to move on to the NeNe policy? Is that okay, Deb?
Yeah, sorry.
So this was something we proposed to the JPA. It's the result of wanting to do room naming, and what we're trying to figure out is a consistent methodology in which to do that. The feedback I'm getting back from the JPA is because they own each of their own buildings, they each want to approve their own names. So I'm going to go back and rewrite this, and what I'm going to ask them for is that we still have a uniform approach to doing that, but then each local friends group will use that uniform approach to go to the local board. So it probably means we rewrite this, we probably have to go to the four boards and explain it, but then the friends groups will be at least applying the some semblance of consistent rules as they move forward with selling names.
Well, I think it's really important to do it out front of this before
it gets too far. So if everyone's comfortable with that, I just wanted to point out we're including the library meeting calendar. Do we need to vote on that?
I don't know if there needs to be an actual motion or vote, but I just went ahead and created a proposed calendar. Just chose every third Monday of the month except for January and February, because the third Mondays were holiday closures. So it's up for you guys to discuss or look at this and see.
No change really from this year.
Are you comfortable meeting monthly?
As long as it's useful for for you all to have.
You know, I think there's so much going on. I'm more than comfortable with monthly. Again, I think what we do is if we really don't have something, we cancel. I don't think anybody minds when we do that. My suggestion is you will have to pick a new board chair and vice chair, because in some ways you're my boss. I shouldn't really interfere with that. So maybe, Deb, as the vice chair now, if you could just have a couple conversations so that at least there's someone, there's a slate that can be presented. If there's a lot of people vying for it, there's no problem. But
last time, how do we decide? I mean, was it Robert's rules? We did a nomination process. I don't
remember. Yeah,
we
did a nomination.
I think we were
going to have a nomination process.
Oh, I was going to have a
nomination process.
No, it is. You're elected. It has been listed on the agenda at a time. Is it the...
It will be part of the agenda, but it would be nice.
Yeah.
If people were recruited, because I find there could be new people that want to do it, honestly, if it's worth it.
Yeah, I do want to say that one place our commission's been lacking is in making sure that there's a report for the Joint Powers Board. Because I happened to be there at the last meeting, and I wasn't prepared. I just figured that maybe Sean or anyway had it figured out, but which was fine. You know, there really wasn't much to report, but I think we should be aware that we're always on their agenda. So either a written report or a...
Could we put that on the future agendas of who will go to the next meeting?
Yeah.
And January 12th is the next meeting. Is there somebody that would be...
Yeah.
January.
I think I'm probably planning on going.
I apologize. I do not know.
Oh, I think I have.
Do you know if it's daytime
or nighttime?
The LJPEA is usually in the morning.
I think it's going to be.
Except
December was supposed to be night and was not.
Yeah. Oh, they changed it at the last minute.
Branch is what is it? Branch, not downtown. Is in the evening or it's downtown? It's in the morning.
So I think it's in the morning.
Yeah, because the next one is at downtown, so it'll be in the morning.
So would someone be willing to answer you?
Yeah, I can go.
I think we should have a motion on the meeting date so we can publish them publicly.
Before that, on the locations.
Oh.
So I went ahead and just stated that the next meeting is Scotts Valley, because in the rotation that would be. And so it would be Scotts Valley, downtown, Aptos, and just go like that.
Okay. Is that okay?
So I think that's the other one motion. So we have a motion to approve meeting dates and locations for the next calendar year.
Yes, that person will.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you.